IL Women Podcast, the source of her sport.
Back after a long recess with the Inside Lacrosse Women's Podcast. I am Matt Kinnear, here as always with Women's Editor Hallie Quillenin, fresh off a really, really busy summer for Hallie, including a wedding and a trip to England for the Women's World Cup, where the U.S. team won gold and then followed that 8 days later with a second gold at the World Games in Poland, an important event for the future of the sport. Hallie, I'm sure you're exhausted, but excited at the same time, aren't you?
Yeah, you know, it was a once-in-a-lifetime trip. You know, to be able to go over there and cover the sport at its pinnacle, which is the World Cup, was an incredible opportunity, and Jackie Browski and I both had a blast doing it.
Right now, we are happy to unveil a special project through IL Women and Inside Lacrosse. We decided to put all 19 players who represented USA on a special commemorative edition series of covers that we are unveiling on the website, an ambitious project, something we've never done before for any part of the sport, and, you know, really excited about it. Hallie, you know, when we were coming up with the cover ideas, we had so many different ideas. We were up against a tight deadline with just the way that our magazine deadlines work, so we already had a Utah men's cover that was in the works, and that was such a big story. But we wanted to do something special for these U.S. women, and, you know, we were thinking, who do we put on the cover? And we couldn't come up with just one person. What was your take on this?
You know, the idea, actually, it kind of came to me while sitting on the sideline watching the U.S. team, the first game that Jackie and I got over there. You know, I think that this is a team that really and true U.S. form, there wasn't one player that dominated. So there really wasn't that clear player to rival a cover. You know, do you put Kayla Traynor on the cover? Do you put Tumelo? Do you put Devin Wills, her last World Cup, probably? Probably Sarah Bullard as well. You know, you could have gone so many different angles. You know, as you mentioned, you know, we were going to do, say, two covers. We just really couldn't pinpoint who on the U.S. team to represent that Women's World Cup cover. So I think what we decided to do, you know, obviously taking a page out of Sports Illustrated Women's World Cup soccer book, was, you know, why choose? We can do a pretty special commemorative digital edition type cover, and we can feature all 19 players. And, you know, we say 19, yes, 18 represented the U.S. in the World Cup. Alyssa Murray was an alternate for the World Cup, and she didn't play until the World Games that following week in Poland. But Alyssa was arguably the strongest player on the field for the U.S. team in Poland. So we wanted to make sure that she was included. No U.S. lacrosse team, no lacrosse team in the sport has won two gold medals at the international level in the span of, you know, 8 days. This was something very special. This was a special team. We wanted to celebrate it accordingly. And I think that we were able to capture that in these 19 covers. You know, again, Jackie did most of the legwork on site there, capturing these images. And of course, Matt Kane did a great job designing these covers. It was really a group effort. I feel like, you know, the same thing with the Kayla Traynor series. I'm just kind of the idea person over here. So shout out to them for the execution portion of this. I thought that they came out great, and I'm happy that we were able to celebrate all of the players and, you know, give them the coverage and spotlight they deserve.
I'm really excited as well about our international edition cover that we did. Megan Whittle celebrating England's bronze medal. You know, to me, this is kind of what these international events are about, is growing the sport in a significant way. You know, the Olympics is such a topic of discussion now. You know, possibly 2028 in LA, we might have lacrosse in the Olympics. And the combination of the World Cup in England, the World Games in Poland, you know, we took a little bit of a different tone on the international edition cover. We have the headline, "The World's a Stage," because really this event showcased how great the sport is and how impactful it can be, not just in the U.S., but in a number of different countries. You know, we saw England win that bronze medal. You know, you were there and you saw that, a great moment. And it's just about a lot more than kind of what we see through our narrow focus. It's a grander focus of the sport. So I'm really excited about that international edition cover. And Jackie's photos from that England bronze medal were, I think, phenomenal. I know she had a little bit of a it was a downpour during the gold medal game where USA won. So some of those England photos are just the best that we had from that week.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the international cover, I think that was a conversation we all had. And at the end of the day, you know, when we decided to take this other route with the U.S. cover, and we were thinking, you know, do we put a U.S. team photo on the international cover? Then we stepped back, and, you know, we all were talking about it. Why do we have to put a U.S. cover? You know, the players that actually don this cover, ironically, are two players that have had a great impact in the U.S. college game. And Megan Whittle, of course, scoring that game winner. She'll be a senior this year at Maryland. Olivia Hamp, really the hero of that game, played at Princeton, a Wharton finalist. And really, yeah, the world's a stage. And personally, I thought that these were Jackie's strongest pictures. And that's really because of the crowd, the hometown crowd that came out to support and celebrate the English women's national team. They were electric. You know, I'd say that they were probably the reason they won that game. You know, the minute England would get a ground ball, let alone score a goal, they were going crazy. They were going wild. I think the players really fed off of it. You can see the emotion in all of Jackie's pictures that she took specifically from that England bronze medal winning game. And it started in the stands. It started on the sideline. The players were feeding off of it. I loved all of her pictures. You know, that one picture, I personally am a fan of it. I love there. She could have had 20 or 25 of these pictures land on our international cover. And as you mentioned, the rain was coming down in the England-Australia game. I've never seen rain come down the way it did in the Canada-US game. So that's certainly saying something to the players that endured that and the U.S. kind of seeing that win through. But poor Jackie and her cameras. Yeah, I think she went through 2-3 lenses. That was why we didn't have a post-game video interview. We physically had nothing to take it with. Every mode of communications, our phones were dead, the cameras were broken. It was certainly a wet one, to put it that way. But, you know, I was so happy when we got back, and her English pictures were just so strong, and I'm glad that we were able to at least represent the World Cup and, of course, showcase a different story. You know, I think that a lot of the outlets out there will cover the U.S. and their world greatness. So I'm really happy that we were able to shed a light on what England did at the World Cup with this cover, you know, meddling for the first time since 05, really feeding off their hometown crowd and, you know, beating an Australian team that this was the first World Cup the Australians left without meddling ever in World Cup history. You know, they beat a world power. So credit to England, and I was glad we were able to celebrate them on our international cover.
You know, it's not every day that we send some people to a different country, you know, let alone across the pond to cover lacrosse. So this is a really cool experience, I know, for you and Jackie personally. I know for you, you were in the tryout process for USA when you were playing, you know, back in your college and post-collegiate days. But this is your first time, you know, being able to go and cover the World Cup. What is this overall experience like for you?
It was incredible. It was so rewarding. You know, I did make that training team in 08, 09. And eventually when that roster was whittled down to 18 players, I wasn't on that roster. A lot of my friends were. You know, I watched my best friend win a World Cup and a second World Cup in 2013 when Katie Rowan was able to capture a pair of World Cups with the U.S. team. I've always been a big, big fan of what the U.S. women, what the U.S. program was all about, what the U.S. women were able to do and accomplish, what I've been able to see them do throughout my career as a player and, of course, my career here with Inside the Cross covering the sport and trying to give it a platform. And really, you know, Jackie and I getting over there, it was an incredible experience. We had a lot of fun. We stayed right on site. So you really got the feel for the camaraderie, not only for these teams, but throughout the entire tournament. You know, all of these teams were close. These players were getting to know each other. You know, I think that the U.S. women were so fortunate that they play for a country and a governing body that really supports them. And and provides opportunities for them to get over there. There were women from other countries that had to pay every cent of the way. Some women had to leave their jobs. It's definitely covering it from that aspect, seeing lacrosse the way it's grown, certainly internationally, all over the world, but the way it still differs and the growth we still need to see in the sport. It was incredible to see it, experience it there, learn more about it. I think Jackie did a wonderful job in her full exposure feature on the Hong Kong women's national team. That was really rewarding, just being able to see the way the world celebrates and plays the sport. And then, of course, to cover the championship rounds, Australia, I mentioned before, they left without a medal. Their final two games were overtime games. You know, they were an overtime goal away from a World Cup gold medal berth. So I loved the way that Australia, England, Canada in particular, all fought the efforts they gave. This was not U.S. winning the show the way they did in 2013. They were challenged, and I hope our coverage was able to not only showcase what was going on over there, but showcase the high level of competition too.
I know you've just from so many people that you played with that have been on, women's, USA and Canada national teams and others. I know you know a lot about the experience before you went into it, but how was it maybe what you thought it would be, and how was it different when you actually got, boots on the ground at the event?
I'll take this approach. You see a lot of ice bags, you see a lot of ice baths, outside of the dorms. There were those little float up inflatable pools that a lot of these players were, the minute they were leaving the field, they were getting their legs in ice baths. All the U.S. girls were using their Normatec. I think what people don't realize is it's very hard to play as many games as these women do in that short of a span. Your body, it takes a taxing toll on your body. So, although these girls were over there and they were, kicking butt on the lacrosse field, and the lacrosse was incredible, the overall international camaraderie, the experience was incredible. Credit goes out to, and I hope we showed and can continue to show how hard these women work to get to that point. They're at the peak level, both skill and physicality-wise, to get to where they are. And when they're there, they're taking care of themselves. They're refueling, recharging in the ice bath. These girls are world-class athletes, and they were taking care of themselves. But I think that was, something that maybe I didn't, it's been a long time since I was in the lacrosse field and had those types of aches and pains. So that was really something that was eye-opening. These girls were tired, they were sore, they were nursing injuries that they had, really just accumulated over the course of playing for that long, and they were still putting it all out there. So that was fun to see.
You've mentioned this a few times on this podcast now about, the effort that the USA women had to put in to win this gold, and just how competitive the level of play is. How narrow is this gap between, USA and then Canada and then some of the other teams that are right on their heels? It seems that Canada is really making a push for that gold medal, and it's not going to be a pushover, for these next few tournaments there, with the way that Canada has been building to be, consistent silver level and now kind of pushing toward gold.
I think Canada's youth insurgence has just been incredible. Prior to this podcast, when we were preparing talking points, you were saying, what were five things you were more so surprised at? Well, one of them was Erica Evans, who is going to be a senior at Canisius this year, is one of the best midfielders in the game right now. That's international, professionally, college. She's incredible. I thought of any midfielder in the World Cup, she impressed me the most. Because she's so fast, she's so athletic, she's so dynamic, she's so talented. She was the go-to player for her team. She never stepped foot off the field. They didn't run midfield lines. She played, full 60 minutes and then some in every single game, and she produced, and she never disappointed. I had known she was good. I'd seen her play prior. I've never seen her play in person, and it was show-stopping. You know, I think if Erica Evans were at a Maryland or a North Carolina, she very well could have won a Tewharton this year. I think that she should be a Tewharton finalist next year. She might not get the credit she deserves because of where she plays, but she is incredible. And really the talent around her, you know, you have to remember this is a World Cup Canadian roster that didn't have Selena Lasota because she's battling an injury and she couldn't play. They have a lot of young talent and of course, bet the like of Dana Doby, Katie Guy, really, you know, leading the way. But that's why I think Canada will continue to close the gap and really challenge the U.S. just because their youth lacrosse, has flourished up north. And I think that they have the right coaches in place. I love what Scott Teeter did with Gary Gate. You know, they had Katrina Dowd on staff, Caitlin DeFleece on staff. A lot of the top U.S. college game coaches leading the way from the sidelines. And I think that they're youth impressed and, you know, youth continues to mature over time over the course of the next 4 years. And I think that next year's, you know, next World Cup's final will be even closer. I think Canada has really showcased their ability to close that gap.
Certainly a lot of names to keep an eye on during this college season as they, you know, someone like, you know, Evans continues to progress. And, you know, she's certainly going to be someone who's a leader on the international stage for probably a few more tournaments to come. You mentioned, you know, just kind of the youth movement in Canada. We're probably going to see some new faces for Team USA, and we'll talk about kind of 4 years down the road, you know, when we end this podcast. But, you know, it's very likely for a handful of these USA players, kind of the last ride, so to speak, in their international competition. How rewarding is it to see some of these veterans go out on top?
Incredibly rewarding. You know, I think it's what Devin Wills and Sarah Bullard have done, capturing three straight world gold medals. That's something to hang your hat on. You know, while none of these players have really publicly announced that they won't be back, you know, I would be surprised to see players like Devin Wills, Kelly Rabel, Allie Carey, Sarah Bullard, Kristen Carr, maybe, you know, Jen Russell. Laura Zimmerman, I'll be interested to see what she does. You know, so I think that there will be a very new look roster the same way there was this time. You know, 2013 had a very different look and feel to it the way that the 2017 roster did. You know, you look at players like Michelle Tumalo, Kayla Trainer, Brooke Griffin, Alex Soss, you know, the entire U.S. attacking corps this time around is relatively young and certainly, you know, just by age and experience, I think you could get a World Cup out of all of those players. But then you have players like, you know, Alyssa Murray, you know, she was an offensive force in the World Games in Poland and the U.S. team's leading scorer. So does she make a push at one of those spots? Does a player like Kylie O'Miller, Kenzie Kent, come out of the college game and really push the needle? You know, in the midfield, Taylor Cummings, Katie Schwartzman, Marie McCool, I don't think they're going anywhere. They were that younger midfield line in the World Cup. But who jumps out of the college game to impress alongside of those players? Kind of same can be said for the defense. You know, Megan Dowdy, Alice Mercer, Becca Block, I don't really see them going anywhere. I wonder, you know, who are the players that jump out? And, of course, you know, in goal, I think that's one of my biggest question marks. You know, Gussie Johns, I'm pretty sure she'll still be around. But who's joining her on the U.S. roster? Is Liz Hogan going to gut it out for another 4 years and gun for, you know, her third shot at a U.S. World Cup roster? You know, she was probably the last person cut, not only on this 2017 roster, but the 2013 roster, too. Does she keep going and play for a spot in 2021? I don't know. You know, Kaylee Waters. And then, you know, the players that I'm writing about right now as we're putting our recruiting issue to print. That was kind of the time frame that Gussie Johns and Marie McCool were in last time around. So does a player that's in the high school ranks and jump into a college game and press to get herself on a U.S. roster spot? It's obviously a long ways away, but it wouldn't be fun and it wouldn't be inside the cross if we didn't talk about it now. I'm excited to see who jumps out and lands on the world stage 4 years from now.
Players like Wills and Bullard, you know, obviously their legacy is, you know, a lot of gold medals, but for USA, there's a bigger responsibility, you know, kind of representing the red, white, and blue on the international stage, because you're really the focal point of the sport as a whole. So really, they've been ambassadors of the sport for more than a decade now on the international stage, a time of tremendous growth of lacrosse, of women's lacrosse particularly. Hallie, let's talk a little bit about Poland. I know you weren't in Poland, but we had a story about the impact of what this event really was. The World Games in Poland kind of served as a little bit of a tryout for the Olympics, so to speak. What's your take on what that event means?
I think that the World Games was an incredible opportunity for lacrosse to be showcased in front of decision makers. And that's what that event has meant for so many sports that have earned entry into the Olympics. I thought Dave Vatz did a great job capturing that in a story that we just posted to our site last week. Definitely worth a read. I don't think that it's going anywhere anytime soon in terms of, you know, that information being accurate and to date. I think that the World Cup, we saw it. The World Games, we really saw it. I think that in order for the sport to be in the Olympics, first and foremost, it has to be competitive. You know, more than one country has to win. And while the U.S. continues to win, the rest of the world, I think, has only continued to grow and close that gap. Canada, of course, being that number one team, but England exemplifying, certainly the Australians, that they could compete with the U.S. and they can put forth their best effort. I liked the rule changes. The field was shorter. There were less players. It was less congested offensively. I think that in order for lacrosse to get in to the Olympics, I know you, myself, Terry Foy, we're all kind of on the same page as this. The women's game and the men's game have to be a bit more similar. I think the field size has to be the same. And some of the rules have to be tweaked. I do like, we saw in the pro game, I think we'll see it in, both pro leagues next year. There will be less players on the field than there are in the U.S. college game on the women's side. It just makes for a faster, cleaner, crisper, easier game to call as a referee because it's less congested game. I would love to see some additional rules in there. It's funny, after covering the U.S. college game this year at the NCAA Division I level, and then going to cover the U.S. team, and of course all of the other teams competing in the World Cup, you do forget how different the sport is internationally. I'd like to see some of the current U.S. rules make its way into the international level. But I think in the World Games, from what I've heard from the players, the people on site, from certainly what Dave covered in his article, people were happy. They were happy with the sport and how it showed there. I'm excited to see, does men's lacrosse get excited to the World Games next time around? That'll be in Alabama. I'm excited to see what this past summer means for lacrosse as we continue to move forward and talk about it as a potential Olympic addition.
Yeah, and there's a thought that 2028 in LA might be a time where we see lacrosse in some format. That's a little bit to be determined in the Olympics. So, I think a lot of people have changed their tune on the prospect of Olympics over the past few years. I think Terry Foy, you mentioned him, he had a great point about the growth of rugby sevens after its inclusion in the Olympics. And maybe we can see something like that for lacrosse. I'm all for it. I know there's some people who are against it because of the rule changes, maybe some traditionalists who don't want to see any of those changes. But, I think the growth at the Olympic level would be a huge thing for the sport. But getting back to the World Cup, talking about teams being more competitive against USA, one of the big stories was England winning that bronze. You touched on it a little bit earlier, Megan Whittle, Olivia Hump. This English team, they beat Australia, they got the bronze. What did you see from the hosts?
I saw a lot of talent, a lot of fight. To be honest, what I saw was a team feeding off the sideline. I would say the fans that showed out, and it was a gross rainy day. There is no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Championship Saturday in Guildford, England was one of those days that you know, you dread playing lacrosse in, let alone watching lacrosse in. It was rainy. The stands were not covered. Certainly the field wasn't covered. It was cold, and they were tough conditions, you know, certainly easy enough conditions where as a fan, you might just opt to watch that game on TV because it was televised. But the way that they came out in hordes to watch this team play and the energy that they displayed from the sidelines. I mean, as I mentioned, every ground ball that was picked up, the fans were going crazy, the goals, the stands were roaring. It was incredible to watch. And I think that the England national team, the English, they fed off of it. You know, Australia was leading and they had a big lead. And then Olivia Homp single-handedly put that team on her back. You know, I thought that she was really the catalyst for that team. You know, she not only tallied the game winner, she tallied all three of her goals, the 7th, 8th, and 9th of the game to push overtime. You know, she really, in my opinion, I was shocked she wasn't on the all-world team. I thought that she was a standout player for England throughout the entire tournament. Megan Whittle, of course, coming up with that game winner. Laura Merrifield. You know, I thought that they displayed incredible talent, but credit goes out to the English fans. You know, I just think they created an atmosphere that team wasn't going to lose that day.
We've talked about a few things that have surprised you about the event. You know, what are maybe a few of the other ones that you didn't get into?
Yeah, you know, when I was taking my points prior, you know, we kind of hit on everything. You know, I thought that the competition level overall, you know, in the entire tournament, I thought was pretty great. You know, Italy coming in as a first-time team, placing 11th out of 25 teams. We saw a lot of overtime games. I thought that really the championship level play, as I mentioned, you know, Australia certainly was a surprise, I think, on the surface to a lot of people. But, you know, Canada and England, they put up a fight against those teams. You know, those were back-to-back overtime losses for the Aussies. You know, I think that Hannah Nielsen, hopefully she'll still be back because she's still one of the best players in the world. Yeah, Erica Evans, I thought that she was, you know, the biggest surprise of the tournament for me, just covering the U.S. game as closely as we do. We're going to be keeping a closer eye on her, and we'll certainly be doing a larger, more in-depth story in the months to come on Erica Evans and her journey to the U.S. college ranks and how she's become probably the most under-the-radar All-American out of Canisius. And, you know, I guess the other surprise was, you know, this U.S. team, you know, I think that the last couple of years, you could have really pinpointed the star of this team, but it really goes back to why we decided to do these 19 covers, to not put the U.S. team on our cover, let alone our international cover, to do this commemorative series. There wasn't one star on this team. They all were stars in and out of every game. You know, I thought one game, Megan Doughty was the best defender in the world I'd ever seen. And then the next game, Becca Black would come up with this play, and you were starstruck watching her play. I thought the defense really set the tone on this team. This is probably the strongest defensive unit I've ever seen on a U.S. team. I've really ever seen on any team. I thought that they were incredible, and they set the tone, what we saw through the midfield and on the offensive unit, you know. And I'm really happy with the way that we covered, the scope in which we covered, and of course putting the exclamation point on it all with this cover unveiling.
You know, with the U.S. team, and we've talked about the team 4 years down the road, you know, one of the more interesting things that I thought we had in the magazine was this young attack group. And I'm just very curious to see what's going to happen down the road. You know, the Maryland / Syracuse attack group of you know, Alex Oss, Brooke Griffin, Michelle Tumla, and Kaylee Trainer. You know, those guys kind of coming together, putting the rivalry aside, and playing some great lacrosse. I'm really excited what we're going to see from that group going forward.
Absolutely. You know, heading into this final year of really World Cup tryouts, there was one attacker that had World Cup experience. That was Danielle Otrasco, and for a number of reasons, really namely just being injuries. You know, she's just been one of those players, unfortunately caught by the injury bug a few too many times in the last year and a half to 2 years. And other players that were younger stepped up. You know, will there be a player that decides to hang up the stick? I'm not sure in this group. They're all pretty young, incredibly talented. They all made their presence known, but the talent that's pushing this group, you know, not only pushing them for their spot, but pushing them to get better and light that fire. You know, I think Alyssa Murray leads the charge, but looking not too far away into who's coming up in the college game, who's coming out of the college game. You know, you can't ignore the likes of Kylie O'Miller, Kenzie Kent. There's a lot of talent specifically in the attacking position. I'd say that this is probably the most talent-rich position, one, on this team throughout this tryout process, and two, of course, in years to come. So it's tough. I wouldn't be able to say confidently one way or another if I had to pick four attackers to be on the 2021 World Cup roster. I don't know who I would pick.
I'm going to put you on the spot just a little bit. You've mentioned Kylie O'Miller, who a few times in this conversation. Who are two current college players who weren't at the World Cup this year that we will see in 4 years?
Oh, good Lord, Matt. Current college players that weren't at the World Cup. You know, I have to say, I've said it before, watching Allison Mastriani play, she'll be a freshman at North Carolina. It's a lot of pressure to put on a player, I'm fully aware. But if she impacts any way, one, the way that we see her impacting, and two, the way that I think UNC hopes she'll impact, you know, I kind of see her being UNC's next Marie McCool. She has that much of a game sense and ability, athleticism. I think she fits the UNC system like a glove. I wouldn't be surprised to see her in the U.S. program. Whether or not she'll be on the roster, I think that she might be in that 36, you know, 36, 38 player discussion. And I think Kerrigan Miller, you know, she's just kind of a prototypical U.S. team midfielder to a T. You know, she's played in the under 19 ranks. You know, certainly her staff knows a thing or two about representing their country for Team USA, you know, whereas Devin Wills has won 3 gold medals. Lindsay Monday's won 2 as an all-world attacker. And she's just kind of that do-it-all midfielder. You know, if you look at the way that the U.S. team scores, their midfielders, they hit the back of the net, but their offense, their attackers do the offensive work 9 times out of 10. The middies, you know, they're the all-around impact players. The way that a Katie Schwartzman, Allie Carey, a Sarah Bullard, a Taylor Cummings, Laura Zimmerman certainly has made a career out of just being that two-way player. And I think that Kerrigan Miller is probably that under-the-radar college player this year that just has the ability to play that way in the U.S. system.
Good stuff, Hallie. We are kind of winding down the summer here at Inside Lacrosse, a much-needed break for a lot of us and for a lot of people in the lacrosse industry as we get through the dead period, out of the summer recruiting, out of rules discussions, out of all that stuff, and a nice little break before we hit fall ball. What's next for you, and how can people follow you?
Follow me where you always follow me. Twitter, I try to be more active. But what's next for me? I mean, recruiting issue, you know, focusing on that, shifting gears towards putting that to press. You know, I think that a lot of people look at the recruiting issue and don't quite understand how much work, you know, this is really a year of work that goes into this annual issue. So I'm hoping people are pleased with that product. And then, you know, getting right into fall ball. You know, I say this every year. I say this probably every week of every year. I can't believe it's already XYZ. I truly can't believe it's already fall ball. We're already talking about fall ball coverage and teams are getting back to campus. You know, freshmen are getting on campus this week and next week. That's crazy to me. But that's where my focus will be shifted, as I'm sure yours will as well. We're excited to see what the fall has in store.
Of course we are. Thanks, Hallie. And everyone, please visit IO Women so you can check out the special commemorative issues that we have, the special commemorative covers that we have of this great accomplishment from the U.S. Women's National Team. And thank you for listening.
IL Women Podcast, the source of her sport.